We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Darius Miller.
This is Drew Hardy.
This is Lance Thomas, Tyree Gavin.
Jason Smith.
Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans.
You're listening to.
And you are listening to In the Know.
In the Know.
The Bourbon Street Shots.
Bourbon Street Shots podcast.
All Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the show. The Pelicans finished the preseason 5-2. I'm sure that means that they are going to go out and win about, 70% of their games this season? Does that sound about right, Michael?
Well, you got to remember, they lost those two in a row, and then they reeled up four straight. So they're on a hot streak that I don't think is going to end for another month or two.
So, yeah, the 27 in a row by the Heat last year, that's in danger.
Oh, we're almost here. I honestly can't believe it.
Yeah, I can't wait to see an actual game.
Like, I'm a little bit upset that our first game is Tuesday, and then we got to wait all the way. Like, they're probably going to beat the Magic, and we're going to be all excited and going to have to wait till Saturday. That's going to be, like, it's going to be a long couple of days.
Yeah, I'm not really sure why we have that big gap at the beginning, and it makes me sad.
And then it happens again the following week. But anyway, a lot to get to before Tuesday night, but, man, I'm excited.
So here's the one thing that bothers me a little bit here is we watch these preseason games and the biggest star we saw in any of them, I guess, was the very first game, Bosch or Wade.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody sat out of every other game. Like, I mean, if you were paying for a preseason game, which I know you probably wouldn't, but if you were paying for a preseason game, wouldn't that annoy you a little bit if, like, You watch a Dallas game and every rotation player that is going to play real minutes in the season doesn't play a second in that game.
I guess, but it's also on the consumer. Like, if I'm annoyed that when I go to McDonald's, it doesn't taste like a high quality burger, that's on me, right? Like, you got to know what the preseason usually is. And yeah, we didn't see many stars, but I was glad, at least in the Wizards game, that we got a heavy dose in the first half and to kick off the second half of Nene and Gortat, which I think is a very imposing 4-5 combination, one of the better ones in the league, and got to see AD and Ashiq go up against those two. So little things like that I was excited about. But, yeah, of course, I would have loved to see John Wall or Bradley Beal or even Paul Pierce, but we got a couple players, you know, here and there.
Right. So let's talk first about Washington. That game, I got to see it, the whole thing, which is unusual in preseason. And you're right. I mean, the biggest thing to focus on was how did Ashik and Davis match up to Nene and Gortat? And my take was they were thoroughly outplaying the Washington front court. It just didn't seem like there was any – like Nene was effective in places, but he couldn't get – position he wanted, and Ashik was bothering him. I mean, it was also interesting that they had kind of swapped the roles where Ashik took up Nene and Davis took on Gortat. It's just so I think that's probably something we can expect to see the rest of the year going forward is Ashik gets the big man who could score. You think that's a good idea?
I don't think it's the big man that could score as much as it's the wide man. I think the wider. Like, even when you hear Monty talk about needing somebody, he never really said the word center. He always says that he wants a big guy or a hefty guy. Like, he specifically wants guys who could deal with heavier guys. And sometimes that's at the four. Like, you know, Marc Gasol is big as well. But I would be curious if, like, the Pelicans were playing a team with Zach Randolph and Tyson Chandler. I think that Ashik would cover Randolph.
Okay.
Just because of the size thing. But no, I thought it was good. And I was watching, I too watched every second of that game. And the most impressive thing to me was I looked about 5 minutes into the third quarter. The Wizards had only made two shots that were either behind the three-point line or in the paint. So, you know, the Pelicans were holding them in the first half. They held them to 29 points. But what was more impressive to me was that even on the shots that the Wizards were making, they were mid-range shots or well-contested shots. Like, we're just so used to the Pelicans getting blitzed from deep or teams getting easy shots at the rim, but neither of that was happening. And I know you and I have talked about this hope that they can be an average defense, but there was a time there during the game when, I got to say, my optimism kicked in, and I might even be disappointed by average defense.
Wow. I'll wait until I actually have a team we're going against that can penetrate a little bit, because that team... They weren't getting any penetration. So, and that's kind of expected with John Wall not there. I mean, there's nobody who can carry the ball to the point of attack. Otto Porter was coming off screens and dribbling the ball up for them, and if he managed to get the ball past like 17 feet, he had like had one of his best possessions of the game right there. So,
5 steals for Tyreek. Total fluke, or can we expect
5 steals?
5. Can we?
Yes.
No, not 5 steals a game, but can we expect to him with those two guys behind him to be a little bit more aggressive and jump lanes with his wingspan and his quickness? I mean, could we expect maybe a little bump in that from Tyreek this year, creating turnovers?
Yeah, absolutely. And part of it will be they'll actually wall off guys getting into the paint who normally would have jetted past him and gotten a layup. And now they'll jet past him, they'll meet a wall, and he'll be able to catch up and rip it away, which is kind of what he did in that game. I think there was a couple steals that kind of the ball got poked away and they landed in his arms. But I would expect that Tyreek Evans is going to be able to be in a situation this season for most of the season where he is... it's possible that he could be ideally used. Let's be completely honest about what's going to be surrounding him most of the time when he's playing out there. He's going to have at least a couple shooters at any point. So if you got Tyreek Evans and at least 2 guys who can stretch the floor, it doesn't matter necessarily who the other 2 guys are 100%. They could, you know, you could probably get a clear out on one side, get your 2 shooters there and have a pretty effective offense. So I'm really looking forward to this. I can't wait till the season to start.
Yeah. I mean, Tyreek specifically, some of his numbers don't look great. Some are eye popping when you see the minute. I mean, He's basically averaging a rebound about every 3 minutes. You give him starter minutes. Like, again, the per 36 stuff, most times it doesn't extrapolate. When you go from 20 minutes to 36, a guy usually doesn't keep up that pace. But you're looking at close to triple-double numbers for Tyreek in the preseason. His field goal percentage isn't great, but and I didn't track it in the Dallas game. But going into the Dallas game, he had missed 7 shots in the preseason. 6 of them were retained by the Pelicans and put back up for scores, which we've called the Kobe assist. We might start calling it the Tyreek assist. But on the first, on his first 17 possessions in which he tried to score a bucket, the Pelicans netted 32 points.
Wow.
Which is insane. I mean, if he's driving to the basket and either scoring or drawing everybody and missing, and it's a definite putback for the Pelicans' bigs, I mean, that's an amazing offensive weapon. You combine that with how well he's been rebounding, you know, the assists that he's been putting out. He's clearly the primary ball handler when this team's in the half court. And then now he's getting steals too, like, I don't know. If the Pelicans do have a breakout season and, you know, they want coaches and fans, whatever, want to reward them with 2 All-Stars, to me, Tyreek would be the obvious one who gets the second nod.
Well, he is 25 years old, and he will be 25 the entire season, and that is peak year for most guards in the NBA. Where their numbers will usually start to decline a little bit after that point, and that's like the big year. If you look at Chris Paul, 25, that was the year he did his monster, you know, 20 and 11 season. So if Tyreek's gonna break out, this is gonna be it. And I don't know. I have a good feeling about Tyreek. That's like one of the funny things about me reading too much at times about this team. I'll go to all these different sites and see what their season previews are, and I'm actually getting mad because every time I read a preview, they mention that Tyreek Evans' contract was a bad one. Maybe it won't be so bad with a new TV deal, but that's the one they single out as like an overpay.
Yeah, Matt, I like Matt Moore and Zach Harper, not only did they say that, but they also said that Drew and Tyreek are a terrible fit, and nothing could be further from the truth. Like, right. I can't read national news anymore. I can't watch, like, the NBA TV had their season preview. I can't watch those, and they're great people, I'm sure, but, you know, nobody could possibly know all the ins and out of 30 NBA teams, so...
Right.
I can't even listen or watch anymore.
Yeah, I mean, if I looked at this team's contracts, I would probably put Tyreek Evans tied for the 3rd best contract on the team.
Yeah.
So, because Anthony Davis is a clear number one. He's way underpaid for what he's going to give us. Ryan Anderson's deal's very nice at, you know, $8 million a year. Actually, he's a little under this year. And then I have a hard time picking between Ashik and Evans. And then after that's Drew, and then after that is everybody before Gordon.
See, I would actually put Evans 2nd.
Okay.
And it's because it stretches in, it goes into when the bump's going to happen. So okay. Like Ryan Anderson, the reason why I think it's better than Ryan Anderson is because Ryan Anderson, his contract's going to come up right as the salary cap goes up, so then his next contract's going to be bigger. Where at least you'll get 1 year for Tyreek at $10 million when the cap's going to be 80 or higher. So that 1 year is going to be one of the best non-rookie scale contracts in the NBA if he plays the way I expect him to. So I think it's a fantastic contract. It's one of those that it just – I agree. I shake my head whenever I – mistakenly come across, and I'm kind of mad that Bill Simmons is doing his NBA previews with five teams at a time because I know I'm going to accidentally listen to the Pelicans one. But
people, well, no. No, you're not. Didn't you see? Because he got suspended, you're not going to see the rest of them. They stopped at like 20.
And he's not going to redo them?
No, because now he has a television show and he's going to do stuff on there instead.
All right. Well, whatever.
So disappointing. I wanted to see where he was going to put the Pelicans because, you know, he likes to rant about the Pelicans. He does.
Yeah, and then what's going to happen is the Pelicans are going to be great, and since he's always been on the Anthony Davis bandwagon, he's just going to give Davis all the credit when it happens. But anyway, it's enough about the national media. I love what I see from Evan. I mean, I think almost everything that we, you know, people still bash on Monty. It's probably the number one thing, well, number two behind any time a small forward with a pulse gets released, I see that the Pelicans should go after him. Like, I'm already getting so tired of that. But number two is just how Monty is so incompetent. But in the preseason, we've seen everything that, you know, quote-unquote, every smart fan has asked for. We see a more conservative pick-and-roll defense. We've seen the three big-man lineup. You know, we've seen Tyreek be the primary ball handler when he's on the floor with Drew and Gordon and others. Like, everything that people were pining for, Monty is at least doing so far. Of course, he's getting no credit for it. But in this game, we saw the three big lineup with Drew Holiday and Tyreek Evans. And frankly, I just want to see those five on the court 40 minutes a game. They played a bit of a zone, you know, which is obviously susceptible, but they rebounded like monsters. Ryan Anderson rebounding as a small forward is just unfair on the offensive glass. And it was absolutely beautiful basketball. And I want to see that lineup every single game, even if it's just for 6 to 8 minutes. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. But again, I got to see it rolling against a team that has some competent guards, really. Because that was the one thing I kept noticing was Porter, like I said earlier, he was mostly running around like at the mid-range, catching and shooting or dribbling around there. As soon as that three-man team went in there, he was suddenly getting into the paint. He wasn't getting to the rim, because no one's getting to the rim against Davis and Ishii. But he was getting at least to the edge of the paint, the free throw line, getting a little closer. And if you have a guy who's maybe a little bit more explosive, has a little bit more cleverness with the ball, being a lead ball handler, I have a feeling that lineup will be much more permeable. But again, it doesn't matter if Anderson can rebound like that. And I mean, he wasn't even hitting his big shots. They left him wide open for threes in that game, and he wasn't hitting them. So he could have just torn the roof off if that was a game that mattered, and he was on point on everything he was doing.
Yeah. I mean, and they're going to have to learn, you know, to play the zone a little better. But I think you're always in an advantage when you play the zone in spurts because teams, frankly, don't prepare for it that much. I mean, Dallas had some success in their championship season where, you know, they would play it in spurts, and since teams weren't used to seeing it, it was effective in small spurts. But like I said, that offensive rebounding was fantastic. You know, the ball movement was great. I think one of my biggest takeaways from the preseason is I think Omer Asik is going to touch the ball a lot more on the offensive end than most people expect. What do you think?
I think it's almost a necessity, because I think that everybody is going to be focusing so much on the other guys on the floor that Asik's going to be having a lot of clear runs at the rim. And so, like, if you take a look at, like, Tyson Chandler's history with the Pelicans and other teams he's been on, generally he got around 8 to 10 shots per game, and only 3 of them would be because he was driving to the basket but he was rolling to the basket on a pick and roll, or it was some sort of play where he was a major option, and all the rest of it was him just cleaning up, rebounding, putting the ball back. I fully expect that Ishik's going to get the same sort of 4 or 5 looks because he's just available at the rim, But I actually fully expect that he's going to be a primary option in all those pick and rolls they're running. Because you can't have a guy like Ashik set a pick and then pop. No one's going to respect that. So you got to have him rolling to the rim. But on this team, there's going to be so many people that you got to worry about. They're going to have to stay home, and Ashik's going to have clear runs. I mean, would you be surprised if at the end of the season he averaged, say, 6 pick-and-roll finish attempts per game?
If you combine finish attempts with pick-and-roll turnovers, no.
Okay.
Like,
you think more?
Yeah, I mean, his hands aren't...
He's not great. Like I said in my recap, like he's good enough to be dangerous, but he's not. I mean, there are some of those plays in that game where he should just be unstoppable. And he's
there's a little bit of Okafor in him as far as the way he put. Like if he could finish the way that Ajinsa does, I would be in heaven. I already love Ashik, and I'm willing to deal with some of the shortcomings because of how great. I mean. If a guy's great on defense but average on offense, people don't give him the same respect as the opposite, you know? So many people forgive average or below average defense if a guy's great on offense, but, I mean, Ashik is truly a fantastic defensive player and will make this team so much better defensively. And so I'm willing to take the shortcomings, but, man, if he would be able to finish – Ajinsa slams are behind only Anthony Davis, my favorite slams on this team. I mean, Tyreek had a nice baseline jam the other day in traffic, but Ajinsa just slams it down so powerfully. And if Ashik could do that, I would see nothing wrong with his game. I think he's going to touch the ball a lot more than we all anticipated when he was acquired. And, you know, I could see some games where he gets 16, 18 very easy points. But there will be times where Pelicans fans will be frustrated because he catches the ball 2 feet from the hoop and doesn't finish.
Yeah, misses a layup. But, you know, that's why he'll probably average. Well, I mean, he averaged what? It was 11 and 11 his season that he actually got minutes in Houston.
With a team that played at a much higher pace than we will, so I don't know. You know,
where do you think he's going to fall? We did this with Anthony Davis the past 2 years. Where, how did we think he was going to develop? What kind of numbers he was going to put up? So let's do that for Ashik. Make your prediction minutes, and then just the important things for a defensive big man, points, rebounds, blocks.
I'll go 32 minutes because I really think they will play the three big men together, which will open up some minutes. So I'll go 32 minutes, 10.5 points, 11.5 rebounds, 1.3 blocks. That's one thing I see is people like, Ashik is very smart and calculated in his movements, and I think some people associate good defense with, like, being all hectic and chaotic and running around with a lot of energy and wagging your finger and all that. I don't think Ashik blocks that many shots, but I don't think that's necessarily the mark of a great defender. Anthony Davis led the league in blocks, and I don't even think he was an average defender last year, so I don't think the block totals are going to be that high.
Yeah. Well, Tyson Chandler and his seasons with New Orleans, I keep going back to him. His best year was 1.8 blocks. So I'm going to actually go for 28.5 minutes for Ashik, and I think he's going to put up 9.5 points and 11 rebounds and 1.3 blocks per game.
So you really think his minutes will be that low?
I do.
I mean, so tell me why.
I just think that I have a feeling that Monty's going to be really, really loath to play the big three guys together. And I fully expect that he is going to give Ajinsa a good 20 minutes.
Whoa.
Well, maybe a little. That's a little high. Maybe 16 to 18. And I think that Ashik is going to be the guy who, you know, at the end of the fourth quarter, he doesn't play. I don't think he's going to, so he's going to lose minutes there. And I mean, I don't even know if Ashik is capable of playing really long minutes. Like, he looks pretty exhausted sometimes out there. And big men tend to have that kind of issues with conditioning because they're 700 pounds. So that's a little exaggeration, but you know what I mean. So I have a feeling he's going to be under 30. That's my expectation.
Huh? Yeah. I don't, like I said, I think they play the three big men lineup some. If, you know, you figure Anthony Davis or Ryan Anderson will lose some games over the course of the year. And in those games where you don't have all three big men, you know, you might get 34, 35 minutes. That'll bump up the average a bit. So I just, I definitely put him over 30. I would put him right around 30, 31 when everybody is available. But again, injuries are bound to hit. And when they do, I think, you know, I imagine a scenario in which Ryan Anderson is not playing in tonight's game. I think Davis gets 38, Ashik gets 34, 35. I think he gets a little more minutes than you do.
Okay. So let me ask you the most important question we will have all night. did the fact that Austin Rivers in the Washington game got 26 minutes and Jimmer got 6, is that indicative of anything? Has Jimmer lost to Austin Rivers?
Oh, I think it's unquestionable. I think for sure Austin Rivers has, I guess whatever you would call it, eighth man spot, the lone backup guard spot that's guaranteed to play in the rotation. I think he has that locked down.
Is that good for you? Did you see enough shooting, enough offense from Jimmer that you think that's a problem? Or I know you keep saying you want them to play together. But if the decision is made that only one of these guys can get minutes, that Monty only wants one backup guard, is Austin Rivers winning okay with you?
Yeah, because it looks like what's going to happen is it's going to be it looks like what Monty wants to do is pull Gordon off the court early in the first quarter. So maybe get him a couple of shots and then get him off the court, let's say at the 8.5 minute mark. And then, you know, Drew and Tyreek play together. And then eventually those guys leave and we see Austin or whichever guard and Eric Gordon on the court together. And yeah, I mean, I think that Austin Rivers and Gordon are a better pair to put with Rhino and some of those other guys. Mainly because, again, you look at these games, Monty was very clear in what he was looking for some of his guards. Austin Rivers goes out, plays 42 minutes in these two games combined, and grabs 10 defensive rebounds from the guard spot. He even played a little bit of small forward as well in some of these games, specifically the Mavericks game. So, again, people love shooting. People love points. I don't think this is indicative of Jimmer as much as if you're going to be on the court with Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson in this second unit that's somewhat staggered, you're going to need somebody who could rebound and play defense. And Austin gives them that. So it's more of a fit thing than a Austin Rivers is definitely better in a vacuum than Jimmer Fredette.
Right. Yep. I'm going to have to cut that piece out and just only the little sound bite. So it says that you're saying Austin Rivers is definitely better in a vacuum than Jimmer Fredette. And then I'll play that whenever I want people to attack you.
Yeah, I'm going to have to move.
I have one more thing to say about just like these two games and then I went and looked because I really like this. All the preseason games. Seven preseason games. I'll see if you can guess. For Anthony Davis and Omer Sheik, for all seven games combined for those two players, was it over or under 19 fouls that they committed?
So seven games. They both played in every game, right?
Mm-hmm. They both played and both played at least 20 minutes in every game.
Okay, so we're talking about 14 total games, at least 240 minutes. Wow. I'm going to go slightly over.
They had 17 combined fouls in these seven games.
Wow.
You realize that last year, Steamsma would have had 17 fouls in three games. Which is, you know, impossible. But no, it's not impossible. My math is really bad. Close to impossible.
No.
I mean, just that fact alone, and I mentioned this in the last podcast, like, you can have a pretty average defense, but if you could just cut your fouls, you can be a good defense. And the fact that we're not rolling guys out there who have to foul every, you know, third possession, oh, that's just going to help us so much.
And
so much.
But see, this is where I feel like you're somewhat contradicting yourself, because in just five games, you have 13 fouls from Ajinsa, and that's only in, let's see, 25 plus 54 minutes.
Yeah, but you have to think of it this way, okay? That's, last year, we were one of the worst at fouling, but that was with Ajinsa and Steamsma and Aminu, who wasn't particularly good. And the first part of the season, we had Lou Amundsen, who was actually the worst of all of them. So we have gone from basically three, four guys who are top of the league in fouls per minute to one guy who's top of the league in fouls per minute. So I will take that any day, especially when it's combined with intelligent defense.
I'm looking at his stat lines now, and if you took away the fouls, man, Ajinsa was 10 for 11. He was a monster rebounder per minute, monster blocking shots per minute.
You're in love.
If you just took away the fouls, like, dude, just get vertical. Stop.
You're in love. You're going to move to France over the offseason, aren't you? Spend some time with Ajinsa.
Maybe we will. I mean, I'm not in love. It would be so exciting to have a fourth big who's competent, and I think he's way more than competent if he could just remove the fouls.
Yep.
So, what was the other thing from the games?
That was pretty much it for me. I mean, the Dallas game, I really had a hard time taking anything away from anything about that because of the fact that they literally played nobody who was going to be a contributor for them in the season. I mean, they didn't even play Brandon Wright. I mean,
I mean, my only takeaway from it is, like, what exactly is Drew Holiday's role on the offside and the offensive side of the ball of this team? Because you've got a guy who's quote unquote a point guard, maybe even a shooting guard. Either way, he's a guard, but he's not really the facilitator. And then, you know, it doesn't really look like he's a guy who's being asked to score a lot either. I mean, we see an average of 13 shots from Gordon and Evans, each of them taking, you know, an average of 13 shots in this game, and then Holiday just takes five. And, you know, again, you look at the stat line in this game, and it's just, I mean, it's a Darius Miller stat line, and it's coming from a former All-Star and a guy who, when he really is being aggressive, is a dangerous offensive weapon. And I really wonder what it is exactly that they're asking him to do. Like, what is going to be, or what is his role offensively? Because, yeah, I mean, that's great if he could put a little bit more energy on the defensive side and really be a hectic defender. But you don't give up two first round picks and you don't pay $11 million for it. I mean, that's basically Patrick Beverley.
Yeah.
So Drew is capable of being way more than Patrick Beverley, but on the offensive side of the ball, what exactly is his role and what is he being asked to do?
I don't have an answer for you. I mean, so if you had me, well, actually, we'll do this. I will ambush you with this because I actually thought about this the other day. If I had to like list my most confident prediction and my biggest worry coming into the season, so start thinking about that. That's what you have to do in a couple moments about this team. My most confident prediction is Anthony Davis is going to be a top three player after the season, and no one's going to argue the point. And my biggest worry is what happened to Drew? He had one good preseason game. One good preseason game. And all of the rest of them were kind of bad. And even the one good one, there was some blemishes, like turnover blemishes to it. So I'm kind of worried. Like, I don't know what I'm going to get from Drew this year. And last year we saw Drew was really up and down at times. And sometimes he was kind of like an afterthought, and sometimes he was the star of the show, but it was more often afterthought than star of the show. So I'm worried. I don't know what we're going to get from Drew, and I don't know if he's really part of the answer to getting this team into the playoffs and be a contender.
Well, but see, to me, that's where I differ a little bit, is I don't think it's a capabilities issue as far as it's a – I think so many people came into this year worried that Monty wouldn't be able to put Tyreek in a position to be himself and be what he could be. I think he can and is doing that, but for right now, as long as Gordon is still part of this team, I think it's going to come, sadly, more at the expense of Drew Holiday than anybody else.
Yeah.
All right, so my most confident prediction. My most confident prediction is that, I mean, the Davis one is what I would have said, but I don't want to be redundant.
A copycat.
So my most confident prediction is that Ashiq plays so well that it's and fits so well that it's not even a question whether he is a long-term core piece for this franchise. That it's just a definite, and it's just a matter of time before he resigns and he gets a nice bit of money to do so. But that's my most confident prediction, is that he's a clear ideal fit on the defensive side of the ball, and even a lot what we're doing with the offense because of his ability to set good screens.
Let me ask you this question. Every year they have the Defensive Player of the Year voting, and you pick your top three, and you get 3 points for a first-place vote, 2 points for a second, and so on. Do you think Ashiq gets any points for Defensive Player of the Year after the season?
Oh, yeah, definitely. If you would have put that at 15 to 20 points, it would have been tough for me, but okay. I think that they take, like I said, I'll be disappointed at this point with 15 or 16. I'm thinking 10 to 14 range, and if they make that big of a jump up, I think the smart people will know that Ashiq will get it gets a lot of credit for that. So yeah, definitely.
Okay, and what's your biggest worry? Is it true or is it something else?
I mean, I guess my biggest overall worry is it's hard to say anything but health. Like, I just keep looking. I have a piece coming up tomorrow about how I really think that this could be 2007, 2008 part two. Because if you look at the similarities between the seasons before, so 2006 season, and then the season we just experienced, and then also what the teams did in the off season and the evolution of a superstar, like there's so many similarities. I mean, even the Spurs won the title before each season. LeBron was a contender with the Cavs before each season. Like, there's so many little and big similarities between this year's team and the 2007-2008 Hornets. But what's going to have to happen is they're going to have to stay healthy. I mean, the 2007-2008 Hornets, those four main guys only missed a total of 16 games.
Right.
I mean, that's huge. So, to me, my biggest worry has to center around health, because we could talk about three guard lineups, three big lineups, Anthony Davis, all this. And honestly, this team is so top heavy that if you have two or three injuries at a time, and you know, it could just take everything down with it. So it's got to be my biggest worry, and it will be literally every game.
Okay. So let's move on to our next topic. This is the interesting minutiae of following a team. Austin Rivers, who we talk about all the time, and there's always a lot of questions about how good of a basketball player he is that people have. Well, the Pelicans had the option of picking up his another year of Austin Rivers. They have to do it by the 31st, so they actually could still do it. But the indications are that the Pelicans will not be picking up his fourth year. So is this a good thing or a bad thing? I know you have an opinion on this. Essentially, it means that Rivers, after the season, is an unrestricted free agent. And anybody can offer any sort of a contract they want to him.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I'm 55-45 on this. I lean one way. I don't think it's a franchise-altering decision. I don't think that there's a definitive wrong way to go on this. I could see both sides. I tend a little bit, if I was the general manager, now I'm not privy to maybe some trade discussions that Dell has had, or, you know, knowing certain things about what the cap might be next year. Maybe he knows more than me and back channels. Maybe the smoothing process is a done deal. But just on the surface, when you look at it, and that the Pelicans aren't really scheduled to have any cap room next summer anyway, you know, the saving of $3.1 million, it really doesn't seem to do anything for the team. So, I mean, you got a lot of separate issues here. Is Austin worth $3.1 million? I don't know about that, but if the team's already going to be over the cap, that question really doesn't matter, because you're over the cap either way. That question only matters if it gives you more room to, you know, have more flexibility as far as trading for a guy or signing a guy. So I just, right now, it doesn't seem clear to me. But what's interesting is apparently Austin said that he was told this over the summer, and there was a lot of cryptic Austin Rivers tweets, and apparently that's what it was referring to. But Austin has known this for a couple of months, and I guess I've got to wonder if this decision was made the second that Dell Demps was able to trade for Russ Smith, and if the play is long term, you know, after to develop him this season, and for that to be the guy that they're planning on being, you know, one of their big backup guards off the bench. I mean, for them to tell him this in the summer, for them to have made up their mind months ago, that's the more curious thing to me, is why were they so fixated on months ago? Because if they're just talking about it as a possibility, that's one thing. But they told Austin Rivers that they would not pick him up months ago, which just leads me to believe that they've got something in the works, or some thought in mind, or some backup plan, to be that sure of a decision that I think is, you know, a 50-50, could go either way decision.
Yeah, unless they're the only thing that I could be thinking where I was going with this was teams that, like, the Dell Demps has come from, They're pretty much sticklers to having their back of the rotation guys be off the scrap heap and not be costing them a lot of money. Now, I mean, if you look at the Spurs right now, that's no longer true because all of those guys were veterans who contributed to a actual championship, and the Spurs are rewarding them as such. But if you look at them overall, like, usually their backup point guard, someone like Corey Joseph or something, they made the league minimum. Gary Neal made the league minimum. And it could be that Demps is of the belief that you don't pay anybody who's just like a fringe backup more than the minimum, because you're just locking up money you don't need to be spending, and you spend your money on the actual impact players that your team has. And that's the thing that I go to with Austin Rivers, is he would have to make a pretty significant leap to be worth $3.1 million again. I mean, he made one already. He'd have to do a very similar, or if not better, one to be worth more than the minimum, because you can basically get guys who are going to give you a 12 or 13 PER for the league minimum. You don't need to have to pay $3.1 million a year for that guy. And it's not like they're saying definite goodbye to Austin Rivers either. Everybody has to remember they did the same thing with Aminu, and then they offered him a contract after everything fell in the offseason, and still brought him back for another year. So they could do the same thing here. But the one situation where this is going to be clearly bad is if somehow Austin Rivers, this is his breakout season. And he is only 21 years old, so it's very possible he could be heading for one or coming up on one. And that's the only situation. If he suddenly pops out and plays really well and posts, like, you know, a nice, you know, off the bench 10-4-4, and, you know, he's shooting fairly well and his defense is as good as we think we are, he's going to be probably outside of the $3 million price range, which the Pelicans will be limited to because of the way these contracts happen. They can't offer him more than his extension was going to be.
That and or you probably have to give him multiple years if right. He plays well, which, again, reaches into I think I have my eye on, and Dell should as well, his eye on the 2016 free agent and or trade class when that bump occurs. And I don't know. I can see both sides. To me, this is the definite right move if one of three things is happening. One, Eric Gordon is opting out, because then all of a sudden, yeah, now it's an extra $3 million in cap room. All of a sudden, I agree. Rivers is not worth $3 million, and since you're under the cap, then it's good to have more money available. If that's the situation, two, if the cap is getting smoothed in a way in which there'll actually be a nice bump this upcoming season, then again, I could see this being a good move. And three, the most likely, if Dell basically just knows that come February, you know, expiring contracts along with maybe a future pick are going to be able to get a Gerald Green or insert small forward here from a team. If he knows that there's a couple of guys who might be able to be had in February, then now Rivers is a better trade asset, because it's easier to trade an expiring contract than a guy with 2 years if the other team doesn't want him. So in those three situations, I think it's a great move, but with knowing only what we know now, I would slightly have bet on the Austin Rivers, because, I mean, you say that you could get that for cheap. I mean, Jared Bayless got 2 years, $6 million this summer. Is it really, I mean, how far beyond it is it beyond the realm of reason to think that Austin Rivers will be better or at least as good as Gerald Bayless, and will obviously be younger? I think that is about the range. If he's coming, if he's going to be a 22, 23-year-old who's now improved 2 years in a row and gives you defense and a couple of other things, spot up shooting, it looks like rebounding now. Like, I think even a 20% increase and his market value is higher than $3 million a year.
Maybe. I mean, the teams that I'm thinking of generally, they're not the ones who pay Gary Neal $5 million or pay Jared Bayless $6 million. They're the ones who, you want to pay my guy $2.5 million? Well, I'll be sad he's gone, and then I'll go find Patty Mills.
Or Brian Roberts.
Like, honestly, like, Dell went to a scrap heap and pulled Brian Roberts. And he's not. And now he was paid by Charlotte to go, you know, get $2.5 or $3 million, whatever his contract ended up being. I mean, these guys are to be, especially guards. Guards, you can find competent guards on the scrap heap.
I agree, but those guys don't have upside, and I still say that's the one thing that Rivers has that a guy off the scrap heap wouldn't. Again, if he improves 15-20% again this year and he's only 22-23, like, that would have given you two straight years in which now a guy has improved fairly significantly, and now, again, you would have him on a fairly cheap contract and the ability to control him in the fifth year. I think that's a slightly better decision, but I do not think that either way Dell goes here is going to make or break the franchise. It's a really tough call. He made the one that he made, and we'll see how it plays out from here, but it sounds like Austin's really motivated even more than usual, and we'll see if that forces him, if that makes him come out and now he's forcing too much, or if that just gives him a clearer focus. And if he has a great season, that's even one more thing to add to the list of why the Pelicans are poised to make the playoffs.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on to some more odd things that happened this last week. I know you love the stuff, and I kind of like it myself. So there was a draft proposal on the agenda at the Board of Governors meetings for the NBA, where they were going to change the draft the way the lottery works. It was actually expected to roll through pretty smoothly with a yes to change it. And it was defeated. It was 17 in favor and 13 against. And you have to have 23 votes in order to be able to pass a change like this. The change was essentially a redistribution of the percentages so that the really bad teams, no one goes higher than 11% chance to win the top pick. And that basically redistributes the percentages down towards the teams near the bottom of the lottery. So I think it was like the 10th team still had something like a 4% chance or something like that, instead of right now where the 10th team has 0.6% chance. Do you think that, A, it's a good thing this was voted down, and why do you think the Pelicans voted down this particular measure?
So,
because that's what they voted against it.
So, yeah, I think I like that it was voted down overall because the draft lottery reform, like, it looks like it happens. Like, they change the system once every 20 or 30 years, maybe. And if this was the system that they picked now, it's not like they would have changed it again in 3 to 4 years, and I don't think this is the ideal system. So
I agree.
So for that, I'm glad it was voted down, just because I still think now they could come up with a worse system, but I also think there's infinite potential for them to come up with a better system. So I'm hoping that they do over the next couple of years. I think it needs to be changed, but not to this. And two, I mean, there's a couple of reasons you could look at why the Pelicans voted it down. I thought from the start that they would be against it, but Zach Lowe, initially said that it was really only Philadelphia that seemed to be piping up as far as being against it. But they made the Ashik trade with specific protection based off the system that we all know right now. I mean, the system that exists right now is the top three teams are chosen, from the lottery process. And then after that, everything goes based on worst record to best in the lottery. And let's say the Pelicans narrowly miss the playoffs. They have the 14th most ping pong balls. Well, if they get lucky and land in the top three, then they keep their pick from this Ashik trade. If they don't, then they're only giving up, I mean, they're guaranteed to give up the 14th pick to Houston. Something that, you know, I'm sure they'd be able to swallow. I mean, giving up the 14th pick for Ashik is more than fair in a trade. But in this new system, it would have been the first six teams that were drawn, and there would have been a there would have been a solid possibility that the Pelicans could have been fourth, fifth, or sixth. And now you're giving up the fourth, fifth, or sixth pick to Houston and just making an opponent stronger. I mean, they made that entire trade with the current system in mind. So because of that, you know, you got to believe that they had a reason for the specific protection they did, and they don't want the system to change. And I agree with that philosophy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, my whole take on this thing is, I can't be so much against the lottery system right now, because this lottery system gave us Anthony Davis, and it gave us Chris Paul, and he was the fourth pick. Everybody forgets that. Like, Chris Paul was the fourth pick. So it's not just because you're getting one of those, you know, the top pick doesn't necessarily mean you're going to make the right pick. But I mean, the whole thing, the way this one was setting up, where now they're drawing the top six, and the reason they're doing this is because everybody's just ticked off with Philadelphia. They're like, Philly is making a mockery of competitive spirit. I mean, they're not putting a product on the floor that is going to play worth a damn, and they're not even trying to. In fact, they're trying to do the opposite. And this doesn't give you any incentive not to do that. I mean, none at all. Like, you still want to be a really bad team, and to guarantee you're a bad team, you go out and you make trades and you sign people that make you a bad team. If the only possible way you can make this so that it doesn't happen is to do something similar to what I proposed over the summer when I was thinking about this, you put something at the bottom which makes it bad if you're one of the bottom two teams. Like, if you're the worst team in the league, I'm sorry, the best you can do in a draft is seventh. How's that? So suddenly you're not going to be getting rid of Thad Young and Spencer Hawes. You're not going to be, you know, saying Jason Richardson is your veteran player when he's in a suit. I mean, one of the saddest stories I heard was Brett Brown pulled together all the guys on his team and showed them a highlight reel of Jason Richardson's career and said, someday you could be like him. This guy standing over here in the suit who you don't know who he is. It's like, they don't even have, like, a veteran they can, like, show a highlight reel of, this is what he did last year, and it was awesome. It's like, here's what he was 10 years ago. He's our best player. That's just sad.
That's really sad. Yeah, I like a lot of if I had to say it, as long as we're going to have a draft and a draft lottery, which to me, I would ideally want everybody to be free agents, the one I still like the best is, basically, you get ping pong balls based on, you know, the number of wins you get in the first or the number of losses in the first half of the season combined with the number of wins in the second half. So, like, you lose. So the best team would be a team that lost a lot in the first half of the season and won a lot in the second. And you would get barely any ping pong balls if you were, you know, decent first half and then throw it away and just lose a bunch in the second half. So something like that or what you proposed, but I think that this system was, I mean, when you got to be creative, you got to throw away what exists, not just make something new that's slightly different from what exists. Like, throw it away, pretend like no system exists, and think of what would be the best system, period. So I don't think this was it, so I'm glad it got voted down. And for Pelicans' purposes, same. Like, yeah, theoretically, if they missed the playoffs, they would have had a little better chance at a top three pick than they do now. But I don't think that would have been worth it for also the potential of giving up the fourth, fifth, or sixth pick to Houston. So,
yeah. Okay. Got another topic here for you. I wonder, now that you've seen all the preseason games that we were capable of seeing, where they actually put a camera in the place, so based on that information, what rotations you saw, who was playing well, blah, 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 you love to do these rotation posts where you're like, at 5 minutes, Jrue Holiday goes out and Austin Rivers comes in. So I want you to give me your prediction on about what a rotation will look like this season. Because, most people are like, well, I think so-and-so is going to play 30 minutes and he's going to play 32 minutes. But that really means nothing unless you actually have a rotation, because some guys can't play together. So, or you have to have somebody covering a particular position. So let's hear your rotation for this team.
Well, so I think first guy out.
And your starting lineup is Ashik, Davis, Evans, Gordon, Holiday, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, first guy out would be Gordon. They'll take him out fairly early in the game for the reasons I said before. They'll put shift down Tyreek to guard. And then I think they'll put Babbitt in. So I think around the 8 minute mark, you'll see Jrue, Tyreek, Babbitt, AD, and Ashik.
8 minutes. So they only play 4 minutes with the big five. Well, minus Anderson. Starting five.
Yeah. Then what I think is going to happen is Monty, let's say around the 3-4 minute mark, will put in Gordon and Anderson together. Let's say take out Ashik and one of either of the guards. Then eventually Rivers, man, this is really hard. Rivers, what I feel is that we're gonna have the big six in the rotation, then we're gonna have Ajinsa, Babbitt, and Rivers. That's gonna be your 9-man rotation essentially. Maybe Salmon sneaks in there, but I think Rivers definitely, at least in Monty's eyes, for the needs that this team has, won that guard position. I think Babbitt has won the small backup, small forward, or whatever you want to call that position. And Ajinsa has obviously won the backup, the fourth big position. I think the only way we see Salmons, and we saw it in the Washington game, is I think he gets more minutes as a backup two than a backup three. I think there's, a couple minutes maybe there for him a game as a backup too. So I think that's going to be interesting to watch, but I think there's a clear 9-man rotation, and maybe once in a while Salmon sneaks in and makes it 10.
All right. So what about Darius Miller? Do you think he lost? Because he still is getting 17 to 20 minutes these preseason games. Do you really think he lost to Babbitt? Because I didn't get any firm feeling that was the case.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I feel differently. I think minutes just as a guy on the court that Monty knew wasn't going to mess up, and run the system and just kind of a safe guy to put out there. But I don't feel like he'll be in the rotation. In fact, I'm having a tough time trying to figure out who the two inactives are going to be. I think if I had to bet, it would be Patrick Young and Russ Smith, but I wouldn't be surprised if Miller was one of them to start the season.
Okay. And let's move to our very last topic for this podcast.
Just get to move on without any, I mean, so the first, at least tell me who you think is in the rotation. So the big six obviously is who else is definitely in the rotation opening night against Orlando and the next game against Dallas.
I think you nailed the – although I think Babbitt is going to not be playing. I think it's going to be Miller.
Huh.
I think Miller's still going to get the first shot at that small forward minutes, and I don't think he'll last more than the 2 weeks Monty always gives somebody. But I think it's going to be Miller. I have that gut feeling. As far as like rotations wise, I fully expect that that Gordon will be leaving about halfway through the first quarter, and then one of either Ashik or Davis will play the entire first quarter, and then the other one will be replaced with 4 minutes to go by Anderson. And I think it really all has to do with matchups. And the same sort of stuff will happen. The small forward position will start in the second half or the second quarter. And Austin Rivers will be there as well to start the second. So I fully expect like either Evans or Drew will play the entire first quarter with Gordon next to them. So.
And how many minutes per game do you think we see from AD, Ashik, and Rhino all on the court together?
Together?
Yeah.
If it's more than five, I'd be surprised.
Really? Okay.
I think you might see one rotation period per game where those three guys are together and then one of them will be pulled out to rest.
So that's what, and this is, I think a lot of people get confused, both of my articles and the podcast. We are right now predicting what we think Monty would do, not what we would do as the head coach. What would you do as the head coach? How much would you play those three together again?
I think it would be entirely up to matchups for me. It depends on who's playing that small forward position. If I fully believe that Ryan Anderson trying to guard the small forward position is a really, really bad idea if that guy has any sort of off the dribble game whatsoever. Yeah, but like you said many times before, there's not a lot of those guys. So I would say probably in 50 out of the 82 games or 60 out of the 82 games, I would probably play him. I would probably give them each a 4 minute rotation in the first half and the second half and see how it works. And if it's working well, keep them on there for an extra 2 to 3 minutes.
You're not a fan of the zone?
I hate the zone, actually.
Huh.
I think the zone encourages 3-point shooting and gives open 3-point shots. And then it allows offensive rebounding, which allows offensive putbacks. I think that's a terrible combination. I hate the zone. I cannot for the life of me remember a time when you're going against a competent basketball team where a team has gone to the zone for any real length of time and it's been a good thing for them. Against teams that have no shooting or they're not like a completely solid offensive team or one that doesn't have a lot of offensive talent, you can go to zone and really, really screw them up for a little bit. But those teams are susceptible to being screwed up anyways. So I'm not a fan of the zone.
I could see the 3-point shooting, but I got to disagree with you on the rebound. I mean, a Washington player did not even come close to an offensive rebound when those guys were on the floor. Like, not even. Remember how last year we talked about how the Pelicans, their rebounds seemed to be like tip rebounds and, you know, nothing just dominant where they just snatch it and turn and get like it was like a wall. Like there was no way that anybody on Washington was even close to getting a rebound when the three bigs were on the floor playing that zone. So I could see the 3-point concerns, but I don't agree with the rebounding issues.
Okay. So, are we good? Can we move on to our final topic?
We are there.
We got two games coming up. Which team you want to review?
I will say I'll take the first game opening night, Orlando Magic. I still can't believe it's just 2 days away, but yep, I'll take that game.
Okay. So the Orlando Magic, it is at home. Do they win?
Early on in the season. I mean, it'll be disappointing because as we talked about on the podcast, like to really be a playoff team or an elite team, you've just got to beat up on the, you know, the teams that are under 500, which Orlando's definitely going to be. You catch them at a time when Oladipo and Channing Frye aren't going to be playing, so they're really trotting out, you know, a makeshift lineup with Vucevic as, you know, the only guy on this roster who I could see being a starter on a playoff team, at least, you know, the player that they are right now, and then just a bunch of guys who are backups or rotational players on a playoff team at best. So
I do want to point out they have Willie Green on that team.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I mean, you're looking at Elfrid Payton as a – but again, Elfrid Payton is a guy that you don't really have much tape on. So, I mean, to overreact too much would be stupid. The opening game of last year, the 76ers beat the Miami Heat.
They won three in a row, didn't
right.
they?
So whether this is a 50-point Pelicans win or a Pelicans loss, it is still just one game. Of course, you want to win more than a loss, but, you know, I'm going to be watching. I'm going to see if when it really comes down to it, how I want to see how are the Pelicans playing the pick and roll. What does their offense look like in the half court? What do Monty's rotations look like? Those things are real things. A win or a loss, you know, that's something that goes into the standings, but it doesn't always reflect what's going on with the team. So I'm going to be watching the things that, you know, I'm more curious about as far as what Monty's philosophy is with this offense, this defense, and his rotations in the game, expecting a win. But again, Philadelphia beat Miami on opening night. So anything is possible, and it shouldn't be the end of the world or the beginning of the world either way.
Okay. We did this all last year. Look at this roster. Tell me if one person on this roster was going to get hot and be the reason why the Pelicans weren't able to beat this team. Who is it, and how likely is that to happen?
So it can't be somebody that could dominate in the paint like Vucevic. You just got a good, huge contract extension. Good for him. He's a guy I really like and would have loved next to AD, but obviously happy with the Sheik. It won't be somebody like that. It would be somebody who would just get hot from deep. I'm going to go with, I think they're drawing up plays for Channing Frye as a stretch four with him out. They give those plays to Andrew Nicholson. I'm going to go with random guy out of nowhere who lights it up from three, Andrew Nicholson.
Okay. Yeah. The only other guy I can see on here who might do it to you is Ben Gordon, because he did it to us last year, or maybe the year before, for Charlotte, where he had one game where he just could not miss from three.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't say Luke Ridnour. Yeah, I mean, so it's going to be really hard for the Magic to pull out a victory here, but, I mean, they beat us in, what, the second game of the year last year again. Sometimes these young teams that, you know, just come out with it. They expend all their energy in these first couple of games. I mean, Orlando, Philadelphia, even Boston, like they were getting wins at the beginning of last year. You'd almost rather catch these teams when they're terrible and in the midst of their 26 game losing streak and have given up on the season. Right now, Orlando's naive and they're thinking they're going to shock everybody and be a playoff team. So, you know, they're going to come out playing with some energy on opening night.
Okay. So are you predicting a win for this one?
I'm going to go Pelicans by 12. I think there'll be some stretches where we look like a championship caliber team, and then there'll be some long droughts in this game as well.
I am going Pelicans by 14, and I think the Pelicans are going to come out and punch them in the face and get a nice lead, because I think the Pelicans, some of the guys on the Pelicans are going to want to make a statement. I really think that. So they're going to come out and punch these guys in the face, and then it'll get whittled down in you know, end of the third, start of the fourth, as they let up a little bit.
All right. I can see that. I'll take either one.
Okay. Then the next game is the Dallas Mavericks. I think I already said this before when we were talking about, you know, the preview of the season and what I expect from this team. And I have no idea necessarily how much better or worse they're going to be from last year. It's almost a wash to me. However, I do feel like this team will also come out and has just the right mixture of veterans that they're going to come out and they're going to throw a tough game at you no matter what. And if the Pelicans are not taking this game seriously and they've already figured out a couple ways that they can attack them, it's going to be a dogfight and it could be a loss for them. There's a couple different players. I mean, Dirk Nowitzki is always dangerous. Monte Ellis is always dangerous. Al-Farouq Aminu is never dangerous.
Except for to his own team.
Except for
the rim when he's taking shots.
But, you know, this is a team that, like, still has Brandon Wright on the inside who, you know, can suddenly burst out and give you, like, a quick burst of 8 points as he wrecks you on the pick and roll. And then he'll go to the bench and the next guy will come on. I wouldn't be shocked if, say, you know, Jameer Nelson came in and hit a couple threes in a quick little run. And if there's a bunch of little, if you let up, you make a mistake. There is enough veteran talent at every position on the Dallas Mavericks team that somebody could make you pay if you're not careful. And I think the Pelicans are still, they're still too much of a work in progress and they're not going to have everything in place yet. I have a feeling that this is going to be around a 6-point loss.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I feel like Ashik is really going to make things difficult for Monte Ellis. Like, I try to start off by thinking where Dallas is going to get their offense from. So, let's say Dallas. I mean, I think Davis on Dirk. I love the fact that now, I mean, if I'm Monty, literally every minute Dirk is on the floor, Davis is right there with him. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'm curious to see what Dallas does. Do you think they put Tyson or Dirk on Anthony?
Tyson. I don't think there's any question.
So you think that they're fine letting Tyson, I mean, having Tyson away from the basket, and then you've got Dirk trying to box out Omer Ashik on the offensive glass? Good luck with that. I mean, I really like the 4-5 matchup in our favor, where I think that's going to be a lot of Dallas's strength a lot. Monte Ellis isn't going to want to go to the rim, so you could get Chucker, Monte Ellis, and I really think that's what it comes down to is, you know, with Monte Ellis, is he hitting those shots on that night? Or not, but yeah, I agree. They have a couple of guys who could come off the bench and put together a nice spurt where I don't know if we could. Although I will say that our reserves will be at home, tend to play better there. Like, you know, I could, if this game's at Dallas, I'd be worried that you'd get no scoring punch from Babbitt or Rivers, but at home, I could see them. I could see them putting up some buckets. So I don't know. I think this will be a good test. I like this matchup. I'm a little worried that they have all this time off and they'll start off a little rusty, but I'm really trying to think of where Dallas gets their buckets from. And I really think a large part of it is going to be dependent on if Monte Ellis is hitting mid-range shots and three-point shots, because I don't think he's going to get to the rim the way that he likes. And because of that, I got Pelicans by 5 in this one.
Okay. You're not worried about the $15 million man, Chandler Parsons? He's not going to take Tyreek and just torch him?
No, I think if he does score, it's more within the system or in transition than really worrying about him on fast breaks. But I am really curious to see what Dallas does. I'll disagree with you. I think that they will have Dirk on AD just because, you know, with Tyreek driving to the hole, and we've already talked about the Kobe assist, and I think it would be so dangerous for them. And detrimental to, you know, for them to have Dirk for 35 minutes trying to box out Omer Asik. I think Asik would eat him alive on the glass. So I think that frontline matchup is going to be fascinating. I think it comes down to the guards. I think Ellis is going to have to vet, you know, really outplay all, you know, both Gordon and Holiday for Dallas to win this one. So I got the Pelicans winning it in what should be a really good battle and starting off 2-0.
Okay. So we will definitely be back next week. I will actually be traveling on the weekend, so we might be a little bit late, but we will be back after a couple games and to preview the next week. So thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know.